finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. We are the Bellows Falls Podcast. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined by Red Powell.
What up?
Tanya Gates.
Hey, everybody.
And Adam Camilleri.
G'day. How you doing?
Welcome, everyone. We've been a little sporadic the last couple of weeks, and I apologize. Been traveling and then, you know, streaming and all the stuff that comes with that. But I got the Chaos Knights episode up behind us, and now we're looking forward to stuff coming out later. And we're also going to be talking about our time in Edmonton. And Red, you could not join us. You were there in our hearts.
I appreciate it.
But Adam and Tanya, y'all are on site where we're doing different stuff, sometimes doing the same thing at the same time.
We were, even if it wasn't streamed, we were in fact at one point doing the same thing at the same time.
The event had some, so the event hall, not us, thankfully, had some issues, and we were not able to stream the segment that you're talking about. We had some, as part of the Games Workshop stream, they've been doing some like shots of painters painting things live and then eventually giving those things away. And Tanya, you were one of the featured painters, which was really cool to see you doing your stuff. And it actually ended up being the first model that we gave away.
That's so cool. Was the person who got it, were they excited to have it?
I'll even go one further, and I hope they don't, hope they're listening. Maybe they're listening, but we were giving away another model, and then they requested when they won to get the model you did, the blood call you did.
Aw, that's so sweet.
It is very cool. So, I mean, it's also a great looking model too. So, really nice that we were able to do that and accommodate them and get to see you. Well, glad we got to see you there. And I wish people had seen the actual paint of that, but unfortunately that the internet did not cooperate.
It did not, but it also meant that I didn't have to like sit up straight and I could just be like all Quasimodo over the desk like I am at home. And honestly, I'm really proud with how that face turned out for such a short amount of time. Turned out pretty good.
Yeah, bold and smooth colors. It absolutely is awesome. If you're curious, it'd be difficult to say, you know, go check it out at a certain place online because we were featuring them, you know, throughout the course of the weekend. But, John Lennon with Emperor's Children ended up taking down that 250 player plus tournament.
Yeah, he did indeed. Now, of course, you see John's name at an event, you think he's going to end somewhere up there. And this was no exception. And so Emperor's Children in the latest MFM Mutual Inferior Manual did take some changes, some significant hits and points to their Flying Demon Princes. And that was because they were just fantastic with minus one damage, doing a bunch of mortal wounds on the charge, and then, you know, deadly in combat in addition. They were just super well-rounded in addition to, of course, advance and charge, fall back and do whatever you want from the Emperor's Children army rule. And so taking three of those was used to be the stock in trade for Emperor's Children, and then you were just taking a accoutrement of like Noise Marines, Rhinos, and your battle line units, be it Infractors or Tormentors with their associated characters, Lord Exultants. And that was the list. The list was just kind of set. But then some internal rebalancing happened. So the Demon Princes went up to 200 points per model, meaning that like you'd want to take three Demon Princes, a third of your list gone. And then you start running really light on your play of the game as the turns go longer. So John took it in a different direction. He's still got his two winged Demon Princes. He's playing the Coterie of the Conceited Detachment. And that's the one that powers up over the game. Like, I call it the Babe Ruth detachment, because at the start of every battle round, you have to like point off into the bleachers and tell Slaanesh how many units you're going to send to her this battle round. And if you do, you get an associated amount of buffs that are cumulative over the game. Like, you get one kill in association with your devotion. You get reroll once to hit army wide. Three is reroll once to wound army wide. Five is lethal and sustained in combat. And then seven plus, I believe, is critical five. So by the time the game gets towards the end point of the game, you really like juiced up on all your units. Two winged Demon Princes, one with Pledge of Unholy Fortune, which allows you to flip a dice to a six once per battle round on a hit, wound, damage, or save. Two Lord Exultants, being those fantastic, you know, essentially Chaos Lord, pretty much. One Lord Cacophonist and Lucius the Eternal. And then we've got double units of Infractors to go with the Lord Exultants, and double units of Tormentors to be those infiltrating pieces that go in sticky objectives. Two Rhinos to carry around the melee assets. Three units of six Noise Marines, and then the spice here, the thing that even when I was talking to John about it before the event, I was like, what's with the two Morlophines, mate? And he's like, I think they're good, and I'm going to find out at this event. Turns out, was not incorrect.
Well, he wasn't necessarily calling him a meta pick, because I think he just kind of felt like they would engage decently with things in general. Yeah. But it ended up being almost like exactly what the doctor ordered, because of the way the bracket shook out. And of course, the demon players that I don't think anyone would have expected of going as deep as they did in the event as well.
So of the in the top eight, after the round five, when we cut to a top eight, there was the only faction that had more than a single player in representation was demons. There was two demons, and they had gone undefeated from, I believe, round three or round four. Those same two demon players that just kept going, buttering up, going win, 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 win. And both of them got knocked out by John Lennon in the quarterfinals and then the finals. He knocked out both demon players. And those Morlophanes were absolutely instrumental in getting through things like Great Unclean Ones, things like Blood Crushers, all sorts of other stuff. They were just going through them like a hot knife through butter, which Empress Children do have a problem with those high toughness multi-wound platforms, because usually they're kind of built a bit like an Eldari army in that they are death by a thousand cuts, or you have a once per game super Saiyan ability like on the Lord Exultants where they'll just punch up really effectively. But outside that, they generally have like mediocre strength and like AP2 or less is what they're wielding on most of their profiles. So putting in like a Morlophane that has like strength freaking 14 D6 plus one damage is really like getting something that is quite rare for the army to have. Outside Blastmasters, there's kind of nothing that hits at a strength 8 or better apart from the Demon Prince.
That's a great point. And it was an all chaos finals. For the top four were all chaos.
Yeah, it was one demon and then three of the Chaos Legions, one world it is, red, one Death Guard, and yeah, one Empress Children. So only Thousand Sons, only the Dusty Boy is not making it. In fact, I'm going to have a little look at standings and see where the Dusty Boy has actually ended up. So first place was Empress Children, second place was Jake Chalmers with Chaos Demons, third place was World Eaters with Fraser Parry, an absolute mad lad, and then we had Stu Angel in fourth with Death Guard. But then where do I have to go? How far do I have to go down to get to the T-Sons? Let us find it. 18th, Aiden McFowl, went 7-1. So well done. And he's titled. Oh, wow. He's titled his name. His club is the worst player in Australia. Oh, hold up. I have questions. You're in Edmonton.
I feel like my teammate had a pretty good run as well with Thousand Sons. I think that he had like a couple of losses and one tie and then all the rest wins, which is pretty good for you know, small town folks like us.
There was some stiff competition there that weekend. That was the largest Warhammer 40,000 tournament in Canada to date. Yeah. And the players came out to play. Of course, we got to see our buddy Scarry there playing and doing extremely well. I think he won like best overall or something.
He did.
I shouldn't say or something. I mean, that's, you know, definitely competed and did really well. We got to see him play on stream. We got to talk to him a little bit. So, you know.
What is the award where you get the most battle points?
Best general.
One. Usually it's best general. But best general in this case is I think what they awarded to John Lennon coming in first place, you know, the only undefeated player. Yeah. But yeah, I think he got like an equivalent of the most battle points earned. Mm-hmm. And doing that with Dracari, wow, that is an achievement. Only he in the freaking world is able to do what he does with that faction.
Holding up those average wins, you know, of the faction.
I track win rates. And it's funny because you can tell which week Skari did and didn't play when you're looking at the Dracari stats. You're like, oh, Skari played this week. Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Hey, look, you know, we talk about faction specialist, and this is, and not to get too deep on the philosophical things, but this is where the point in this edition to where the generals are being able to general, and the general expression of the player ability is really making a difference out there.
And I mean, like I said about John Lennon, when you see somebody who's like made the top table of the World Championships of Warhammer three times in a row, you don't really bet against that guy.
Yeah.
But man, he had some tough runs. There was a couple of turns. You can go back and watch. We got two of his games up on stream. There's a couple of very distinct turns where I was like, oof, he might be going down. And it was really exciting to see.
So seeing, you know, how players like that use their units to good effect, either to block, you know, to where they position them and for what reason, when you can see it happen physically, not just hear about it, you know, which is one of the coolest things about these streams that they can do that. And then so to do that as effectively playing against other players that are also doing the same thing. Like, it's a great play. And, you know, we talk about his list and how that kind of helped him in that one game that we happen to see, you know, but his play style is with him in every game, you know? So
yeah, as is everybody's
maneuvers. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, I gotta say,
you know, I just want to make the, you know, they did call this the year of chaos, right? And we've seen that in highlight, but I'm surprised, I guess, from all the complaining that there weren't more Death Guard up close to the, you know, in the top four, but I'm glad to see the variety. I'm not complaining. I'm glad to see the variety. I didn't think that, well, it took the meta a second to shift over it. And I mean, y'all just came out of your meta chaser show. They're still doing well, but I think that they meet their real run for the money when it comes to the skill that you're talking about, like John Lennon.
So they're not, as I do think Death Guard are a top three faction in the game, but that's what we're talking about. The fact is, you can be a top army in the game, but then the armies under you still have the ability to play and have games into. So there was right. 15. There was 15 Death Guard players in the pool, in the 250 odd players. Just gonna have a quick look. 17 Blood Angels. Any other factions? Angels,
18 Necrons is what there were. So and Blood Angels were the top represented factions.
And look, Necrons still did pretty well. I believe there's a couple in the top 10, if I'm correct in the check. Yeah, 5th and 7th was Necrons. And then they had another one in the top 20. So they had three of the top 20 placings for Necrons. And with 18 players in representation across this event, you'd assume that would be something of the case. But yeah, 100% in fully agreement with Red. Like, despite me thinking that like Death Guard are contending for the best army in the game, they're not unbeatable. It's so, like, the gap between armies is minuscule compared to where we've been. Just think about the start of this edition where, oh, cool, you have two Wraith Knights. I'm just going to play. Yeah, there was no point because they shot you died, and they overwatched you and you died, and then you tried to get to them and you died, and you know, there was that was one of the biggest cliffs we have seen in player ability being negligible, and ever since then it's only gotten better for this. And what I'm gonna bash this drum, but we are very close to having a complete game. We have what, Drakari Votann, we've just heard Black Templars are getting a book. Yeah, Drakari Votann, Grey Knights are pretty much the, now that we know the Imperial Knights and Chaos Knights books are on the way as well, they're the only like kind of mainline faction codexes that kind of aren't supported with a codex yet. And so we're very close to a completed game, probably by the, like, in the next couple of months, hopefully in the next 3 months, we're done. And then we get like a clean sweep 9 months before possibly a new edition's coming, if we're on track for a 3-year cycle.
So like the Death Guard, going back to them specifically, is that they've got a lot of very powerful units, but some of them do require like a setup. You've got to do something to get something or whatever. Now, I'm not saying you got to like jump through super hoops, but you still have to play the game. And so generalship comes into that. And then they're also a known quantity. Like, people are aware of what, you know, because of the information age, what the Death Guard can do.
Well, exactly right. And Death Guard exists at such a unique, I guess, breakpoints on profiles, like toughness 7 on their stuff, like similar. They exist in similar breakpoints to Custodes. So if you meta for Custodes, you're meting for a lot of their profiles as well. But then they add the wrinkle of having all like things like the Blood Drones and the Mephitics, which are a little bit higher again on the breakpoints, but also existing around that toughness 9, toughness 10, you know, 3-up, 5-up chassis. And so the thing is, we're in such a kind of a, because of the cult legions that came out, like the T-Suns, Empress Children, Death Guard, World Eaters, we're looking at the meta from a viewpoint of like, oh, if I just meta to kick the crap out of Astartes chassis, like if I just meta to absolutely annihilate like a Khorne Berserker legionary, you know, assault intercessor chassis, I should be pretty good here. And then Death Guard's just sitting a little bit to the right of all. And so it's an interesting thing, but that's one of the reasons people put them as a distinction above and beyond, because they are just kind of like a very spicy Custodes army, more than they're playing like an Astartes army.
I think their main advantage is they don't really have to compromise. They could have great shooting units and great assault units in the same list. And that's tough to deal with.
They're assault units with unique delivery systems as well. Like, you can totally rapid ingress and walk at your opponent with your death shroud, or you can try for the 6-inch bomb and charge, or you can just deploy them on the board and just tell people that they can't really push against your bloat drone castle because they're going to get death shrouded. So there's a myriad of different way of playing their aggressive assets. In addition, Plague Marines are still one of the best battle line units in the game. Like, you just take whichever characters make the most sense to you, chuck it in a rhino, you got a superstar unit.
Yeah, and oddly enough, the Poxwalker spam is like the infiltrating Poxwalkers and the boar control and the zombie horde is like not really being a huge thing. And I wonder if that's because of all the vehicles in the other list.
Well, it's the breakpoints, right? They don't kill anything. They'll get stuck in and they'll stay there. But then you're playing like a weird Necron list, you know. You're playing like kind of a less durable Necron list that started off the board and got the grips a lot quicker than Necrons do. But still, it's playing with a little bit worse breakpoints there. But everyone's taking Poxwalkers though. Like pretty much every list is like slamming out like 2x10, sometimes 3x10 Poxwalkers because they're now one of the premium utility units in the book.
Red, you mentioned the other show that Adam and I do, the Meta Chasers, the Warhammer Meta Chasers. You can find us over there. We just did a breakdown of what 10 Death Guard lists that are in a tournament in Utah, right? You have it in this weekend, but the list composition, you know, they're taking a lot of similar units across all those different lists, and it was interesting. All
right. Let's open up to the panel. I've got the numbers here. How many units of 3 Death Shroud do you think there are across these 10 lists?
Like all together, like add them up, or are you talking about
them all up?
What's the aggregate average in a list?
Add them up. How many total units of 3 Death Shroud are there across 10
lists? How many lists are we talking about?
10.
10. Okay, so first, before we do this, I love this game.
Need more time to think.
No. Well, I mean, I am in the background but Tanya, before we fall for this trap, right? Game show host, this is how they get you. Because, you know, there's this whole bias system of how this works, where the first person who says a number just throws the whole thing because of the biases involved, right? And so without even looking at any of the data, you know, when someone asks you, like, how tall is a sycamore tree, and you're sitting there trying to think about it, and someone throws out a number, you know, 400 feet tall, and you're like, man, that just doesn't, like, 400 feet tall, but then you get anchored on it, and you're like, can a tree really be 400, you know, and you're asking about the sycamore tree. I'm telling you, it's this real bias thing that throws us. And so you got to look at, like, the background math of it all. How tall... Adam, I'm asking you. I don't care if you ask me first. How tall is a sycamore tree?
200 feet.
Tanya, how tall do you think a sycamore tree
is? Be 200 feet. You don't need 20 story trees.
I don't even know what a sycamore tree is.
I don't give a crap.
It's one of the tallest trees out there.
I will say 400 then.
All right, Paul, what do you think?
I'm gonna go with 122 feet.
It sounds a lot like Paul just got the Google machine out.
the only person to give a specific number rather than just windmill slamming something into the ether.
I'm sitting here.
It is 66 to 115. I just Googled.
That's right.
I live in a desert with really stumpy little trees. But we also have cactus, though.
So. I'm really good at approximating things.
I live in Australia. Our trees burn down every year.
Yes, my trees are also burning all around me.
Have you stalled enough to figure out how many?
Yeah, correct.
Like, and there's nothing riding on this, not even your reputation.
I'm going to go with 20.
Tanya, would you like to have a punt?
So there's 10 lists. I'm going to say, you said 20, Red?
I said 20. That would be two per list.
25.
See?
Paul is, I can't ask Paul for it.
No.
Red, you are dead on. It's exactly 20.
Whoa.
Run the numbers, set up the lights. The price is right. Let's go.
I saw it. I was on the last show. I saw it. I wasn't going to guess.
You can win this. This is a thing that I fidget with. So this is a bespoke ADHD fidget hand thing where you put it in your hand and you roll it around and stuff. You've just won this fantastic prize. I don't know how much it is. It was a gift, but it's yours.
I can't wait for you to bring that to the next time we see each other.
Yeah. you can have this prize, which is a bespoke 20-sided dice made of metal that I stole from an event.
No, I want that. Definitely, if you stole it, I want that one.
Hell yeah. You can have the dice.
Yeah, because you need that fidget thing. We know you do. It's okay.
Yeah, but correct. And this random 50-cent piece.
Nope.
In Australian currency.
From where?
Go back. No.
It's from Australia. It's got like flat edges. Look at it. It's glorious.
Nice.
It's worth like 30 something cents in America.
But you see that, you know, 20, two units per in every single list, then 27 bloat drones with grenade launchers. So that's like most lists have three, some just have two, you know. So Like, those are, I don't know how many Blight Haulers there were, but there were a bunch of Lords of Contagion, and honestly, fewer Mortarions than we expected, with only two of us bringing a Mortarion.
There's a total of 17 units of Mephitics, 14 of which were singles, and 3 of which were doubles out of 10 lists. But yeah, way less Mortarions than I would have thought. There's only 2 Mortarions out of 10 lists. I would have thought that'd be much closer to 50%.
And fewer Chaos Spawn. Only 2 players took 2 Chaos Spawn, which I think is ridiculous. So, but anyway.
But how long is
it? Maybe they know something you don't know.
No, I completely agree. Like, I think that's, you know, like, we're going to see the results, you know, of what's happening out there. And it's very possible that, you know, Spawn are not, you know, the coolest thing in the Death Guard, which they aren't. You know, they got a lot of cool vehicles, which, like Adam was just talking about, like, have those different breakpoints without compromising any of their offensive power. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe that's where the brute force power and the less finesse of the Spawn is important.
Mm. But do bees have knees, guys?
Do bees have knees?
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely have little places where their legs bend at that you could call that a knee.
Is it a knee?
A knuckle. It's all, they're all just...
Yes, bees do indeed have knees. Well, all right, we solved that one. The age-old question has to be set to bed. We can move on with our lives.
On that note, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about the Play on Tabletop event that Tanya also participated in. There was also wasn't filmed, but, you know, there's like a lot of similarities. But it probably should have been because of how cool it was. We'll be right back, everybody.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back, everyone. Thanks for putting up with our silliness. And let us know how you guessed in the comments. If you... When you're at a place where you can comment, let us know what your guesses were. But really, I am looking forward to seeing how things shake out. You know, is all chaos going to be something that is persist for a while? We've had some strong chaos books come out.
Yeah,
I have existed in a chaos heavy meta forever, so it's chaos is always looking good out here.
But demons, you know, I always say this, and is that when the meta is solved, that the demons can be stronger because you can like pick the right things for the, you know, whatever the task is. And are we just moving to what is pretty much just a power armor, Astartes type meta, which makes the demon list easier to figure out? But it's no takeaway from the generals, but just curious if that's something that actually matters.
I mean, you'd have to ask a better general than I.
So I'm of the opinion that, yeah, we're getting close to that point where people can just identify what they need to take and what's going to be best for each meta. And I think that puts demons in a great position.
Yeah. I mean, of course, you know, you got some detachment support, and then, you know, with the inclusions and some of the, the Legion list, it's going to be neat to see how they play out. Because I think that demons are things that are like uniquely Warhammer, you know, and it's kind of cool to see them on the table. And man, Blood Crushers.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
You want to talk about Astartes killing machines? Yeah, absolutely are. They are phenomenal at it.
So briefly before we talk about the narrative event from that Tanya participated in with Play on Tabletop, is that I seem to notice like units that get like fake grenades.
Yeah.
Seem to be doing pretty well. Like things that do them, like the Demon Prince, like from Slaanesh, the Emperor's Shielder, they do the mortal wounds on the charge. Let's go back to those Mauler Fiends. Mauler Fiends have like short range meltas in their bellies.
Yep.
You know, so like all this, you know, kind of stuff that's not grenades. And of course, I know meltas aren't mortal wounds or whatever, but, you know, these other things that dish out mortal wounds, in the, even like jump back intercessors and that kind of stuff, like they're like really powerful right now. It's like guaranteed, you know, 1 to 5 damage on something, which seems to be enough to bust through.
Mm.
And Blood Crushers can do 18 mortal wounds.
Technically.
Well, okay. Yes. I know you have to roll.
Let's not let that happen. As a community.
You have to roll and roll and roll. You have to roll. You have to basically have the best day of your life, but they do a lot of mortal wounds on the charge. So I think that's like, I'm going to put them in the fake grenade.
I like that idea. I like that concept though. Yeah, look for the fake grenades.
Yeah, in your codexes. Like if you have, you know, quasi grenades, then it's on anywhere on a data sheet, in your codex and you weren't taking those units before, then maybe they're worth looking at because they seem to be working out really well for a lot of people. But we'll see. All right. So narrative event. A lot of players. A lot of people having fun over there. You were in cosplay. How did it go down?
It was really great. A number of the people who were taking part this year also took part last year. And it was actually a continuation of the story from last year that they got to play through again. So, and this year we were a lot more organized than we were the year before. We had a lot of fun. I got to be the leader of a battle group of 25 players. And so because of that and the story that they were playing through of us being a band of allies of convenience, I was a sergeant who was a reluctant hero, and I dressed up as such, and it was just a ton of fun. I think my particular battle group, I was trying to whip them into shape like a good Cadian sergeant would, and by the end our pairings process was going really smoothly. We were at our tables first, and in terms of the storyline and overall points, we came in second and achieved our personal goal as well.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's a really interesting format as well, because there's basically two ways that you can score points for your team. You as an individual cannot win unless you get best sportsman, spirit of the event, or best cosplay. Those are the only awards that you can win. Other than that, you can get points for your battle group. So overall, sort of points and wins losses go towards the ending of the narrative, and then each player each round gets a little secret agenda. When they achieve it, they call a tournament organizer over, and something narrative happens at their table, and that particular achievement goes towards if the battle group themselves achieve their own goals.
That sounds fun. I mean, people over there were having a blast. So while we were doing our broadcast, there was not continuous, but there were wahs every, you know, like there was folks getting really into it over there. And then we could hear it. Folks could hear it on the stream. It would cut through all the noise canceled. Hear the WAS.
There was two events actually on our side with WAS, right? Because the narrative is going on, but then also Play on Tabletop is running a King of the Colosseum tournament at the same time. So if you've got people WAing over there, then our people are going to try and out WAH them as well. I'm not sure if you guys heard, but our very first WAH of the event, we listened to see if the competitive people would join in, and when they didn't, we booed them.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, traditionally, the orc players in the event will call the WAH when they call their WAH. And so,
But anyway, you guys didn't WAH back, and so we were very disappointed in you.
Well, the internet felt your WAH.
Excellent. Yeah. By the end of I still actually don't have my voice fully back. But on the Monday where I was traveling home, like I could barely even, I just had no voice left from all the WAHs.
No, it was a cool event. I actually enjoyed walking around the overall convention hall. Of course, the Warhammer booth is always awesome because you can get things only available there, which is, you know, sometimes neat to see it on the shelf and you're like, oh man, now's the time. I've waited all year to get this limited thing. And there it was. And of course, you know, hanging out with all the players, we talked about the generalship of a lot of the Canadian players. There were, of course, some other players that had traveled there, but it was really cool to see, you know, all Canadian players from all over the provinces. Am I getting there? The province.
That's correct. Yes.
come in there and, you know, basically jumpstarting, you know, what was the largest event to date, which kind of means it's possible and other folks will be doing it, which is always nice.
Yeah. I'm kicking myself for not getting one of the plushy servo skulls. Next year, I'm going to bring a bigger bag so that I can fit more stuff into it, because I want one of those servo skulls so bad.
Yeah, they're cool. The plushies are actually, there's a few different plushies you only get at that store. Well, maybe you can get them online, but you can definitely get them at the store.
Purple Son of Shaiish from Age of Sigmar. So cute.
Yeah.
It is cute, Red. It's cute.
No, I mean, I, you know, last time I was there. In fact, I've got a Watch from the Dark sitting right here.
Nice.
Good there's man. There's a Nurgling, or not Nurgling. No, there is a Nurgling, and there's also a Ripper around here somewhere. My kids have them all. They're all over the place. So.
Oh my goodness! So on the stream, painted was things you can't get anywhere. Arjack Rockfist, a Wolf Priest, and a Head Taker,
mm-hmm.
and then the Blood Claw that we got to see painted. So we had Adam, another Adam from Warhammer community there painting. We also got a chance to hang out with him some. Really cool guy. It's not the first time I met him. A couple times he's been over here, but always really cool to hang out with. It's kind of neat when you encounter folks that you have seen online in their physical presence, you know, and like get to say what's up, which is always cool. And generally just had a good time. I mean, we had some challenges there. The venue had some challenges that we also had to contend with. But, you know, everyone at the convention themselves, incredibly nice. And the people we dealt with at the convention level, really great dudes. And they're at least the ones that I met, and, you know, run into them occasionally at other events. And so just seeing how this community is growing and expanding, and was cool to go and do that in Canada. I'd never been to Edmonton. We were there during the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that was kind of
It was neat. Cool. Now, we did go and watch a little bit of the action right next to the stadium, the Oilers Stadium, where we were staying a block away from.
I think that's around the area that they call the Mosh Pit. Did mm-hmm. you guys venture
yeah.
in?
We did, yeah. It was free to get into, so we just walked in. And...
Yeah. Also, for people who are listening, we had, I guess, a bit of a fire alarm during the event as well. I don't know if it was an actual fire or somebody just tripped something. I'm not sure, but... everybody casually walked out of the building. How was that vibe for you boys?
Totally
fine. It was raining when we went in, but the sun was bright and shiny when we went out.
I just always find it so funny, like Canadians tend to be so chilled about stuff. It's like, oh, is that the fire alarm? Oh, I guess we better like grab all of our valuables first and then walk leisurely outside of the building.
I got my stuff. I didn't know if they let us back in or not. I am like, can't we?
I didn't know. I was being a good team player and I was waiting for Paul to gather up his stuff. And I was being like, if I die, Paul, because you got to get every last item of your
It's a
possession.
Concrete building. Like, how, you know.
Could have been a carbon monoxide. Could have been a gas leak alarm. You don't know.
It could have been
odorless. We could all be dying.
It's a huge building, you know, like we'd be fine. Even if there was a gas leak, it'd take a long time to saturate that building.
Well, we made it. Thankfully we made it.
We survived.
Made it back to Atlanta. And everyone made it their respective places for me, Atlanta. But I would love to go back. I'd love an excuse to go back. So hopefully, you know, we were hosted at the GameCon Canada. Maybe they do it again next year. It'd be neat to do. And I think being there with the sporting event, like the other vibe from that, it was pretty cool. It matched our vibe.
Yeah, we went out for burgers at a very interesting place. You guys also frequented there as well. There was a playoff game happening, so of course it was on the TV. And so half the people in our group were like paying attention and socializing. The other half were watching the games. Very interesting vibe that first time we went.
Well, more to come on that. And check it out. Put it on your list of things to do if you see it come through again. And it's something you can get to. Next Absolutely. Thing that I'm getting to, and Red, you as well, the ATC in Tennessee, right. An annual event, playing in the 8-person team event. So sharpening my list, a lot of different, you know, we are a team, building team list is different than building singles list. We've got functions on the teams. So seeing how that shakes out, going to be talking more about that in next week's episode, probably the next coming week's episode, see how lists are coming together and everything else. But that has led me to do some modeling and building and stuff. Like I'm considering taking a gladiator. I don't have the gladiator lancer. Like I want one to pop things. And also, the mission secondaries. This last event was the first like major event that we've seen that was using the brand new missions. And you know, is that changing your list? Anybody changing their list up for the brand new missions?
I am going back to an old faction of mine for the first time since 7th edition. So I am just trying to, I made a Highlander list so that I can try out a bunch of different units and see which ones I like. But I haven't really considered too much the new mission pack, although I have played the new mission pack quite a bit and I really like it.
Nice.
So the Challenger cards, I'll talk about them in a second, but Adam, Red, y'all altering your list up at all for these new missions?
Not yet, because I'm playing Knights at the moment, Chaos Knights at the moment, because they just got a new book. I'm not going to play around too much with the Imperial Knights index while I've got a whole new codex and I've already been playing Imperial Knights. So I'm just going to kind of test my way into that book first and then adjust for the missions, I guess. That's how my process. I've got four lists, obviously, four very different lists that I'm very excited about running. And once I run through a couple of reps of all of them, I'll start iterating and trying to get a little more mission juice going. What about you, Red? Or is this like, if they're all dead, they can't score?
I mean, Imperial agents, man. Like, I mean, what are we talking about? Like, this new mission set, did anything change so much so that I need to stop looking at 50 Death Watch veterans? I don't think so.
That's all battle point. Line. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's the point. I mean, for me, I'm thinking about putting things in that make no dead cards for my opponent so they don't get any easy cycles. And that's just something to think about. But while we're on the subject, the Challenger cards, of all the games we looked at, tell me if I'm wrong, Adam, I'm not being hyperbolic here. Please tell me if I'm wrong, but the Challenger mechanic didn't seem to let anybody battle back it as easily as we thought.
Yeah, so it made the difference between players less, but didn't result in anyone who was losing win. That makes sense. No one who was as soon as they got a Challenger card, I didn't see a single person who generated a Challenger card go from behind to in front, if that makes sense. So it's an interesting thing because it is a get back in the fight mechanic. It's not a you will win and you will automatically all the issues you're having in this game that have resulted you getting in position will just fade away problem, which means it's a lot better because I had some fears.
I'm not saying it can't happen, but I'm saying we didn't see it.
I'm betting it will happen. I think we saw three games that we were able to stream where the Challenger cards were drawn. But yeah, I had some qualms about it when it was first announced. I thought it was a little too easy to get the Challenger cards, because there is a lot of armies that are very front-loaded in their scoring and some that score very, very well towards the back end of the game. And so it can just help those ones that score towards the back end of the game a lot more freely. I'm talking about things like Thousand Suns. Thousand Suns used to be famous for, essentially they didn't try to score cards until turn 3, 4, 5. But until then, they were just maneuvering for position and like pinch hitting. And there were innumerable armies like that. Where on the reverse of that, like things like Tyranids and Orcs would score prolifically from first turn and then peter out and, sometimes end up getting close to table by the end of turn 5, but were doing so to establish a points lead in the hopes that you couldn't catch it. Mm-hmm. Now, those are the ones I'm a little bit more fearful for because that's what they're doing is they are juicing up their opponent whilst doing the only thing that those armies, if designed in that manner, are built to do. Like they don't really have another way to go about it with those builds. So we'll see if those ones. And I mean, all these codexes are deep enough that you can pivot into something else. These aren't just like these are one build books. There's no one build book that we have at them. So I'm pretty sure the meta will just adjust and everything.
I'm hoping so. And look, I don't have a huge sample size yet. I'm actually gonna be playing some more games this weekend myself.
I'm already disappointed in Red. The one book build was supposed to be the fish in the barrel, and he was like, Adam, there's only berserkers in boxes. I don't want to hear any of this other stuff. You put it in a berserker, you put it in a rhino, you go, you just go. Top gear, straightforward.
Throw the bolt pistols in the trash. On the way. So I'm going to be trying some games this weekend. I'm sure I'm going to, find a spot to be behind and see if the Challengers help me battle back in. It may just have been, of course, the small sample size that we had witnessed. But there was a lot of, at least, discussion around, like, it's going to be too easy to claw back in. But, you still need the pieces to do the stuff. And the request of the challenge card are not necessarily gimmies. What there is a gimme is that you get to score them in your turn, and if you want to use a stratagem, it's always going to be zero, which is not nothing. It's actually very cool, but I just didn't see it flip any scoreboards. And that remains to be seen if that's consistently how it is. This is probably of the three things that we've seen is this mechanic so far. I think it's going to be the one that's used the most.
Yeah. So I mean, of course, we've had Gambit's secret missions and now Challenger cards. Gambit's, in my opinion, kind of didn't work at all, unfortunately. They were too narrow and then too extreme in what you had to do to get them, like have all the units remaining in your army on the middle objective at the end of the game. That's where your units die. That's where units go to die. That's the unit graveyard over there in the middle of the board. And then we had secret missions, which on their first iteration were too easy, where there were some armies that could just automatically do this, like a Tau player going second in Farsight with a 3-inch deep strike. They just 3-inch deep strike the commander on your home objective, shoot SMS at it until you can't hold it or zone them off. 3-inch deep strike, cool, 20 points. Magnus, moving three times, just goes and takes your home objective on turn 5, 3 points. Or armies that had no battle line, and therefore it was easy, very easy for your opponent to kill the one or two units you had, and then, you know, no battle line, 20 points. And then they got changed and became a lot harder to do, because, of course, you got the turn 5 scoring of your primary got removed in addition to the secret missions. I do like this version a lot. I think this version is the most interesting and intriguing of the ones that we've seen so far. And now that I've seen them in play and heard from a bunch of people as well who've been playing them, my potential doom and gloom has faded.
I like how it's like both players know exactly what the parameters are.
Oh yeah, it's face up. Yeah,
when it slipped. Yeah. But I'm sure I'm going to get an opportunity to play with them this weekend. It's been I'll report back more.
You plan to lose? You plan to be behind in games, Paul? What's going on?
Well, I play against some good folks. It's like, you know, steel sharpens steel, you know?
Fair.
But we'll see. More to come. All right. Well, that's our show this week. Glad we got to recap the things we've been up to, let everybody know what we've been up to so they know why. Maybe some of the shows have been staggered. We've got a few weeks before we have to do anything else. So looking forward to continuing to talk about all things out there with Warhammer World. It's been a pleasure. Please leave us some comments down below. Don't forget to subscribe if you have not already. Tell the algorithms where we are. If you leave us some 5-star reviews, please do that. If you leave 5-star reviews, I'll read them on air.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. Very nice.
I mean, you know, with some
editorial. Within reason.
Yeah.
Don't say rude things in them, please.
Adam is a stupid moron with an ugly face and a big butt, and his butt smells. And yeah, Simpsons quote. But yeah, it's a Simpsons quote. Sorry.
Well, thanks, everybody. We'll see y'all next week. Have a good night.
See you guys.
Bye.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!